The reading today is taken from Ecclesiastes, chapter 1, beginning to read from verse 12. The book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 1, verse 12. I, the preacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I applied my mind to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the sons of men to be busy with. I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. I said to myself, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me, and my mind has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. And I perceived that this also is but a striving after wind. For in much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
And then I'm also told that though there are no more sandwich lunches available, there are a number of soup lunches still left this lunchtime. If you'd like one, do go to the table over there at the end and book yourself one in and then enjoy it. We may need it after today's gloom session. So back to Ecclesiastes, to page 587, and let's have a look at what he has to say to us this week. You can imagine, can't you, Magnus Magnusson getting him in that big black chair and the music is playing and the spotlight is on and Magnus says name and he says Mr. Preacher. He says occupation and he says king. The greatest, in fact. Subject? Life. All that is done under the heaven, everything that is done under the sun. Yes, our man is back again on his favourite theme, exploring the meaning of life, looking at it under the sun, starting where anyone must start, taking the world as it is and as it seems, not bringing into it God or anyone else, just saying let's look at life as it is and see what sense we can make of it. Last week he looked into pleasure and found he was barking up the wrong tree. This week, he's heading up a cul-de-sac marked wisdom. Now, I don't know how you think of wisdom or knowledge. We live in a world where bits of paper are so important that I suppose academic qualifications spring instantly to mind, how many initials we can put after our name. Well, this man has got enough to fill the envelope. But even if we're more down to earth than that, and we think in terms of street sense or market feel or experience of the world, it really doesn't matter. He is mastermind at life. Mr. Preacher, verse 16, literally has the wisdom of Solomon. He's the shrewdest and most comprehensive observer of life you could wish for. He spots so astutely the way the world works. Listen to him. You can't help but admire him. And his verdict is, chasing wisdom is like striving after wind. In much wisdom is much vexation. He who increases knowledge increases sorrow. It's that verse, verse 18, it's that dismal verdict that we're concentrating on this lunchtime. Now, what does he mean? Let me put a negative in first. He does not mean that we might as well be fools. There is nothing anarchic about this book. He's not trying to tell me there's no difference between being a fool and a wise man. No. Let's listen to him on the fool, because that's important if we're going to get this in perspective. You see, for Mr. Preacher, the fool is simply someone who sees too little. He has no time for the fool. Mr. Preacher is not against wisdom. Oh, he knows it's much better to be wise than foolish. No, there's nothing more dangerous than a fool. Dangerous to himself, that is. He falls into all the traps going. Why, you hardly have to lay one out for him. He who digs a pit falls into it. He who splits logs is hurt doing it. What do you call yourself when you're hammering up the picture and you hit your finger and not the nail? Oh, you fool. Well, expletive deleted, but that's what it is, isn't it? You see, even when he knows what to do and he's got what it takes, the fool never knows when to use it. We know that the fool shuts the stable door after the horse is bolted. Well, Mr. Preacher just puts it slightly differently. Knowing how to charm a snake is of no use if you let the snake bite first. See the fool? So busy telling us he's just discovered the secret of how to charm the snake that while he's talking it bites. It's no use holding the fastest rising share in the market if you're still holding it when it hits the bottom again. There's nothing more dangerous than the fool. There's nothing more talkative than the fool. You can tell a fool by listening to him, according to Mr. Preacher. A fool is destroyed by his own words. He starts out with silly talk and ends with pure madness. A fool talks on and on, though no one knows what's going to happen next, and no one can tell us what'll happen after we die. That is the mark of the fool, isn't it? When the subject moves into those areas where we all know that no one knows the answer, who's the one person who isn't daunted? The fool. He's talking as blithely and blandly as if it's simple maths, 2 and 2 make 4. I was looking at someone's official Sloan Ranger handbook the other day. Calls itself the first guide to what really matters in life. You can be sure nothing of much in here does matter. But at the end of the 160 pages, the last chapter is marked, "The Sloan is Dead." I'm afraid he's not as realistic as Mr. Preacher. It's not actually the Sloan who's dead, it's the Sloan's relative. And the chapter is on how you should hold the funeral properly. Which, by the way, is not to concentrate on the funeral, but the memorial service, in case you wanted the clue. Anyway, we've got beyond the memorial service in the chapter, and afterwards come the cocktail party. And here are snippets of the conversation that you can enjoy at the cocktail party. Tom is the Sloan's relative. Tom is therefore dead. Tom should have been here. Oh, he probably is. Tom was very fond of this wine. Still, he'll be drinking something better now. This sort of talk is almost too common for us to be able to say it's fool's talk, but it is, isn't it? The fool talks on and on, even when we know that no one can tell us what'll happen after we die. The fool trivializes, doesn't he? Anything serious is trivialized. Cocktail parties and tabloid newspapers are brilliant at it. Why, according to Mr. Preacher, the fool gets worn out with all his talking. He doesn't even know the way home. He'll introduce us at the end of his book to an academic fool. It's actually possible to be bright and a fool. The man who's so exhausted studying all his books and still doesn't know the way home in life. Still hasn't worked out the meaning. Now, please, we've stopped on the fool because I want us to see that Mr. Preacher is not despising wisdom. He's not the kind of preacher who's going to lead me up to some mystical cloud out of touch with reality and the way the world works. Mr. Preacher is far too shrewd to do that. He knows that I need wisdom to cope with life. Oh, he'll go on urging me, "Don't be a fool. The fool sees too little." So full of his pat answers, he doesn't even see the problems. But don't expect too much of the wise man. That's what he's telling us in our verse. The fool sees too little, but the wise man sees too much. There's a problem with wisdom as well. One version translates verse 18 like this. It says, the more wisdom you have, the more worries you get. The more knowledge you've got, the more it hurts. It's got the feel exactly. We've found that the men who know most are the most gloomy. And actually, that's not Mr. Preacher. That's Albert Einstein and Bertrand Russell. And Mr. Preacher's reason for saying it is this, that if the fool doesn't see any problems, the wise man sees too many. Life has actually got more problems than solutions. If you look closely and you're observant, and Mr. Preacher is, you'll land up with more questions than you've got answers to. You'll find that time and again, you'll know what's wrong, but you won't be able to do anything about it. You won't be able to change it. Now that is a depressing situation, isn't it? The fool's happy, but that's only because he's stupid and doesn't see the problem. The wise man knows the problem and can't alter it. He's worried. He's sorry. Look around, says Mr. Preacher. And you'll see injustice, but you won't be able to stop it. Again and again, he introduces his little observations like this. He says, there's an evil I've seen under the sun. The BBC calls its program rough justice, doesn't it, when there's some dubious decisions? Well, Mr. Preacher is blunter. He would call it crooked justice. You find wickedness, I've noticed, he says, where justice and right ought to be. Yes. He's not blind about the world. He knows you can find a bent copper, a rigged jury, a bribed judge. It happens. Knowing it is one thing, though. Stopping it, well, that's quite another. See, he knows if you look around the world, you'll see oppression. It was there in his day. You'll see tyrannies. You'll see the injustices of bureaucracy. That's life, isn't it? That's the 20th century world as well as his. But knowing it doesn't stop it. We can take the big problems of the world today. Mr. De Quayle from the United Nations, he may even know what the just solution to the Iran-Iraq war is. Won't be able to get anyone to act on it. That's his problem, isn't it? He may have returned from his trip wiser. But if he has, he'll be sadder. And there's no defense for ourselves to these injustices, not even morality. Mr. Preacher won't let me bring God in on the cheap. You know, as long as you're good and do the right things, it'll be okay. Look at what happens in this world, he says. Sometimes righteous men get the punishment of the wicked, and wicked men get the reward of the righteous. Well, it happens, doesn't it? We probably all know people it's happened to. Good men get it in the neck, bad men get away with it. That's life. Knowing it's going on has never stopped it. Or again, look around you, says Mr. Preacher. You'll see that the world is full of, well, what you can only call bad luck. You won't be able to stop it happening. It's extraordinary that that kind of a concept is here, and yet it's true, isn't it? We know that in life you can get all the right plans, you can get all the skills you need, you can put in all the energies, and the things still not work out. Listen to him. Again, I saw that under the sun, the race is not to the swift. No, favourites don't always win. Nor the battle to the strong. There will always be some cup upsets. Nor bread to the wise, nor riches to the intelligent, nor favour to the men of skill. But time and chance happen to us all. You can have all the talents, do your best, and still not make it. There's many a boardroom full of lesser talent than those beneath them. You probably know people it's happened to. Yes, of course, he was too young when the opening came. Too old when it came again. We know it's happened, we know it's happening, We'll never stop it. That's life. He sees it working out in other ways as well. Listen to him here. He says, here's something else I've seen. Stupid people are given positions of authority. Rich men are ignored. There are many fools in high places. That's life. Whether you're thinking of government or the management of the office. I mean, it's true, isn't it? It happens. Knowing it doesn't stop it. And of course, the ultimate thing we know about, the ultimate thing, if we're wise, we discover is true about life, that we can do nothing to change, is death. Just turn over the page to chapter 2, will you? Here's the biggest tragedy for Mr. Preacher. Look at verse 13. Then I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. That's what we've seen already. The wise man has his eyes in his head, but the fool is blundering around in the dark. And yet I perceived that one fate comes to all of them. And then I said to myself, what befalls the fool will befall me also. Why then have I been so very wise? What is the big difference? Where has being wise got me, he says. You feel Woody Allen has read him, don't you? Woody Allen said, none of us will get out of this alive. It's a good concept on life. I may be an egghead or I may be a dunce. But either way, I'll land up amongst the worms or in the furnace. That is the truth about life. It may not be pleasant, it isn't pleasant, but it's how it is. You see, listen at the next memorial service, Sloane or otherwise. Hear the tribute to the person's wisdom, to their achievements, even to their goodness. And as you're listening to it, ask yourself this question. Yes, but where have all those things got him now? What use are they to him now? I've tried it. It makes for very painful thinking. We come back to chapter 1 and verse 18. That verse is truer than we like to admit, isn't it? In our wiser moments, we know that Mr. Preacher is right. Actually, the more we know about life in this world, the more we look at it under the sun, the sadder, the more painful the prospect is. It's actually too painful. That's why we so often turn our backs on our own wisdom. We know that injustices happen, but we try and hide from them. We say, well, it doesn't happen here. We know that time and chance come to every man, but we say, well, it won't happen to me. How else can I run my life? We know that death is the ultimate reality, but we desperately try to blot it out and not to talk about it and mention it. Well, Mr. Preacher is brutal. And he will keep on bringing them up in front of me until I face this truth. Under the sun, wisdom. Trying to find meaning to life, looking at it this way round, will be like striving after the wind. What's he leaving me with? If the fool sees too little, but the wise man sees too much and doesn't have the answers, do we just head for suicide? No. No, actually, this book is teeming with hope. I've been struck, the more I read it, the more hopeful it becomes. Mr. Preacher is dying to tell us the answer. He's got his big punchline at the end of the book. It's not a very long one, but even so he can't stop himself littering the pages with clues. We've been looking at a verse that speaks about wisdom and knowledge leading to sorrow and worries and hurt. We'll actually only have to turn over the page to see wisdom and knowledge that lead to joy. But we won't do it yet. No, you see, he's not going to reveal his hand until we're ready to look at it. He won't give away his answer until you and I can bear to hear it. Now, if you're at that point, if you're feeling suicidal and despairing, well then, before you throw your wrists in the oven, as a friend of mine put it, do ask the friend who brought you here about the answer. He may well have travelled this road before. But I've been living with this teacher for quite a few weeks now, and I'm realizing how bitter a pill it is to swallow, and how reluctant I am to take it. You see, like you, I imagine, I've been brought up to cope. My education was designed to help me get on and get by. Every instinct is honed to acquiring whatever I need to do that. It's my way, it's actually our most popular way of playing God. We wouldn't talk about it in those terms. It's more like just that we want to run our own lives. I don't have pretensions to run the world or a country or a company or even a church, but myself, yes please. Thank you, I'll live my life my way. And Mr. Preacher is saying, you'll never do it. It's striving after wind to try that path. Now, am I ready to face that truth? See, only if I am will I really be interested in his answer. Oh, I know that I haven't acquired that much knowledge and wisdom, and that Hugh Palmer's wisdom isn't worth bothering about, but Mr. Preacher's is. It doesn't come greater than what he's got. And yet, funnily enough, that is not the striking thing, that is not the significant thing about the wisdom he describes in these verses we've looked at today. It's not so much its greatness, it's this. It's that it is, well, in his language in verse 16, acquired wisdom. It comes from what he's searched out, observed, what he's applied his mind to. I acquired, he says, I searched out, I observed, I applied my mind. And where did it get me? The best you can do getting by that way is going to lead you to sorrow, worries, hurt. Now turn over the page. Oh, now let's breathe out and give ourselves a moment of hope. Chapter 2, verse 26. Look halfway through that verse. Do you see here's wisdom again? Wisdom and knowledge and... Yes, how different. Wisdom and knowledge and joy. And do you see what's so different about this wisdom? Yes, it's not wisdom I acquired. It's wisdom that God gives. Am I really ready to listen? Am I really ready to say to God, God, I can't work it out. You tell me. Yeah, even if I can't prove what you say is right, you tell me. Are you humble enough not only to listen but to act? To say, God, I can't make sense of life. You tell me, and I'll do it. If I'm ready for that, then I'm ready for next week. Let's pray. Sovereign Lord, you know how reluctant we are to let go. How much we're geared to acquiring and getting by and sorting it out for ourselves. Give us grace to be ready to hear your wisdom. For Jesus' sake. Amen.